Good afternoon, and welcome to WHYY Super Bowl Special, How the Eagles Bring Philadelphia Together. I'm Kevin McCrory alongside Avi Wolfman-Aaron and Cherry Gregg, and the next 2 hours are about three things: fun, family, and football memories.
Yes, and we want to highlight all the positive things that come from a deep Eagles playoff run. You know, the camaraderie in the streets, the immaculate vibes, the music, the dancing, and the bonds that form across generations.
And I have a sixth sense. I can tell when people are turning off the radio because they don't like sports and they're sick of the Eagles. Mm-hmm. And we know that's some of our listeners. But I am here to tell you right now that this special is for you too.
Yeah.
This is not the X's and O's.
Nope.
I'm not telling you about the cover two.
This is culture.
The 4-4. Yeah. This is culture. This is about Philly. And let me give you a taste of some of the guests we have coming this afternoon. Mm-hmm. We have a reporter live from the scene in New Orleans momentarily. We have a comedian who's gone viral for his sports radio caller satire. We even have renowned Philly chef Michael Solomonov with tips on how to elevate your game day food spread.
Not just wings. Just wings here.
But I would do wings.
Me too. We got to add to the wings, though.
We're not denigrating wings.
No, or hoagies.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah, and to your point, Avi, before we bring in these guests, I do want us here in the Studio 2 family to get to the heart of the matter, right? Yeah. We're all pumped for the Eagles to kick some Kansas City butt this weekend, right? We're going to see Saquon rip off some big runs. We're going to see A.J. Brown score some touchdowns and Jalen Carter and all these guys. But beneath that,
my wife was compared to A.J. Brown at the liquor store yesterday.
Whoa.
Because she caught a bottle of wine before it fell. Wow. Someone had knocked it off.
What an honor.
And the cashier said, "You're like A.J. Brown." That's how deep this runs.
I would have popped my collar if I was there. That's good
work, Rosie. Good hands.
Beneath all that, right, there's something much deeper going on, right? Mm-hmm. For me, my personal thing, I want you guys to give your personal thing too, but for me, Eagles fandom is like so deep in like growing up in the 80s and 90s in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And the family parties we would have in Wissanoming, in Morrell Park, the houses that I had, and the bonds you have and the memories you make from your family in those times just kind of stick with you, right?
Yeah.
And then like people die. Life moves on, and like when you think back on your memories of like the people who matter most in your life, it's somehow like it's sports, it's football. It's like those are the memories you have that you really kind of cling to. And I'm a dad of four now, right? So I think about this stuff with my own kids and the memories that we're making. And so like, I love just kind of doing it up for the big football party, right? A couple weeks ago.
What does doing it up mean?
Doing it up. So yeah, a couple weeks ago before the Packers game, it's like, all right, what are we going to have? And it's food, right? It's culture. So it's like, all right, I'm going to make meatballs. Like my grandmother used to make meatballs, right? And so there's me and my kids, and we're hand forming the patties together and we're the balls together and we're roasting them. We're doing the whole thing. And then everybody comes over, we're eating the meatballs. And it's like, don't let anybody tell you that this is just a game, right? Because it's not. It's an opportunity to share together, right? It's you make together, you share together. It's meatballs, it's memories, it's all of it.
Is it always meatballs?
Always meatballs.
For me, it is nachos. That would be like the one thing that I associate with watching the Eagles over the years is nachos. But it's weird for me because I grew up as an Eagles fan in the DMV. So this whole community aspect of it, sort of sharing it with your neighbors and seeing it in the streets and even just going over to someone's house to watch the Birds game, like the only house that was doing the Birds was our house. So it was really a lot of times just me and my dad and my mom. Every once in a while, my sister would drop by, even though she wasn't super interested. So it's much more of a nuclear family thing for me than like an extended family or community thing. So my memories are always just tied to specific games I watch with my dad, and sometimes even being on the phone with him once I moved here. In fact, I remember being on the phone with him when there was a game. The Eagles had a crazy comeback against the Giants, and they won on a punt return as time expired. And
was that the DeSean Jackson?
Yes. And we were just like, you know, screaming on the phone. So for me, it's a much tighter thing. And then since I moved here, it's become more of like that broader idea that Kevin described.
Yeah, well, full disclosure, I'm a D.C. girl. And so I'm repping the transplants on this panel here today. And I'll say that I grew up, you know, watching football. My dad played football in his youth. My brother was captain of his high school football team, played college ball. He was like, he played both sides, and he played defensive end. And I was a cheerleader when I was in elementary school. So we went to a lot of football games, and after church, we would watch football. As far as my love for the Eagles, it is a community thing. Yeah. As a reporter, I mean, I hung out with the fans on Sundays. I was eating their ribs and their, you know, half smokes. You know what I mean? And I bought this to go, because if you have on Eagles gear, you're more likely to get the good food, right?
So, and to make friends.
Yeah. And you know, I also interviewed a lot of the players, you know, just doing their work in the community. Yeah. And it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And also, like, I first learned about the Eagles when I got my own fantasy football team in 2011. And Mike Vick was my quarterback. So I started really paying attention to the Eagles. And so, go Birds.
I didn't know you were a fantasy. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. 2011. I wasn't that good, but like, I really started watching the game. You know what I mean? Like, and not just watching the game and drinking and talking to my friends. No, I mean, like, really paying attention to stats. Yeah. So
that's what we're about for this big special this afternoon. And we want to hear from you. Tell us what the Eagles have meant to the personal relationships in your life. What are your traditions, your superstitions, your go-to party foods? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499, or email us, studio2@whyy.org, or you can comment in the chat on our live YouTube stream.
Heavy participation for 2 hours here.
Yeah,
to call. We really want to hear from you. This is a community thing. We're having a community show today, okay?
All right, now let's bring in our first guest, Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Matt Breen. He's covering the team live from New Orleans and joins us via Zoom. Matt, do we have you there?
I'm here. How you guys doing?
Hey, Matt.
Great to have you.
Great, Matt Breen.
So give us a sense of how New Orleans has been this week. What's going on down there?
It's funny because I was telling somebody earlier this week when they asked, like, you know, how is it? And I said, if you didn't, this is like Tuesday, and if you didn't know that the Super Bowl was in town with the banners and stuff, you wouldn't know, because no one is here on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But then last night is when the green came in and all the people from Philly were here. So now, today for sure, you know the Super Bowl is coming. Last night you could feel it, and now, you know, it's kind of the wave that will take us to Sunday.
What's the vibe of the Philadelphia fans? Are they like happy, excited? What does it feel like
cocky
for them? Yeah.
Yeah, it's neat. So my brother-in-law came in this morning. So he's wearing, and I'm just wearing my normal clothes, but obviously these are Eagles fans, and they're wearing the Eagles gear. And so many people, as our walk to breakfast took 7 minutes, they probably got 30 Go Birds from all different people.
Yes.
So it's if you didn't know any better, you would have thought we were in Center City, and here we're in New Orleans, and it's the same vibe that you're feeling back home is what these people that have flown down for this game, you know, they brought that same vibe. And I think it is a little bit of a confidence too going into this game.
Matt, you're like me, Northeast Philly native, born and bred. I think we're both graduates of Archbishop Ryan. So go Raiders.
Who's your rival?
Oh, Father Judge.
Go Judge. Okay. Let's just balance it out. Go Judge.
But Matt, you're the pride of St. Martha's too, parish. And you were telling me the other day kind of about the traditions you had in your family. Like, can you get into that? What did this mean to you and your family?
Yeah, like I always wonder, like, obviously I loved sports growing up as a kid, but did I love like sports, or did I love, you know, spending time with my family and my dad and my uncles and brother and stuff like that? And like the one question you asked to listeners, like, what do the Eagles mean, or how special is the family because of the Eagles? And it's like, well, what would the Eagles mean without those relationships? I don't know if it would mean the same to us if we didn't have those. And we had, especially in 04, the Super Bowl year, was every Sunday became a family party. Everybody just, you know, as the season went on and got closer to the Super Bowl, the party got bigger and bigger, and there was always, you know, chili on the stove, and it was an ordeal. And I remember even my dad is a normal guy. Like, he's if you met him on a Wednesday, he's a normal guy. But, you know, in Philly we talk about how we all, this blue collar work ethic sometimes becomes a cliche, but I do believe that, like, people in Philly work really hard, and sports is that escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sports for my dad was his escape. And I remember the Eagles winning a game, and like 97 on a pick six in Dallas. And he picks up the phone before text message. He's got to call. So he's got to make his victory phone calls. He's got to call my grandpa, my two uncles, his friend. And in like the middle of call number three, my aunt calls for my mom. And he's like, Mayor, are you kidding me? Eagles just won. You're calling the house. Bang. Slams the phone. And it's just like, that's what it means. Like, it's just, it's bigger than, you know, guys lining up and playing games. It's this escape for us from, you know, people that work 9-to-5 jobs. And it's like, this is what they look forward to all week. Get me to Sunday. And if the Eagles win, get me the next one, because the next week will fly by.
You were telling me about like your game day, like rituals with your dad that season. Give us a sense of like, you were waking up at like 5:30 in the morning or something, right? On a Sunday?
Yeah. A good Catholic boy had to get to church on Sunday. And I get that out of the way early. 6:30 mass as a high schooler with my dad, because I knew if I get that out of the way early, then it's just preparing for the game to get me to 1 o'clock. And we would go, you know, we would do the guest list on Saturday night, make sure who's coming over, who's going to be there at kickoff, who's bringing what do we need to get? We'd go to Wawa, you get the newspapers, you get a pretzel factory and get the pretzels, you go to the party store and get the balloons, and this place, Acme, to get the drinks or whatever. And it was like, we had to check off all of our list, and it was just part of the deal. It just made, you know, instead of just like turning the TV on and putting on the game, it was became an event. And it's just again, like I love sports, like, you know, don't get me wrong, but I think what's special about it is that you're enjoying it with a group of people. Like when they win the Super Bowl, I know I'm, or when they won, I wasn't the only person thinking of, you know, who was this for, like who am I thinking of? Like that's just what's special about it. It's and we all feel that way. Like we, you know, I think what I did was unique, but it's not like you. I did a story on this football NFL player from North Philly who told me about what it was like for him growing up in North Philly. And he would go outside when the Eagles won. You could hear the whole block screaming when they scored a touchdown. And I'm like, well, that's how they celebrate in Northeast Philly. That's how they do it in North Philly. Yeah. I bet that's how they do it in West Philly and South Philly. So it's the whole city feels the same way as I did as a kid.
Yeah, it just crosses so many lines, like neighborhood lines, class lines, race lines. Everybody bleeds green in the city, and that's the one thing I learned. And it just brings people together.
There's always one Cowboys fan, by the way, on the block. Just
let's go start something.
Just letting you know.
One fraud on the block.
There's always one fraud.
They're everywhere.
I have a neighbor who's got a bumper sticker that says Jesus hates the Cowboys. So, you know, and he's got a Cowboys fan that lives in his house. So that's how in you know, his face that neighbor is. But I want to ask you, our listeners, if you've got personal Eagle stories to share, traditions, superstitions, go-to party foods, we'd love to hear from you this hour. 888-477-9499. You can email us, studio2@whyy.org, or comment in the chat on the YouTube live stream. Hello, Studio Tubers. Matt, I want to ask you real quick about what you're working on down there. Story about A.J. Brown wanting to be a sports journalist. Story about an abandoned bus in Northeast Philly. Lots of great stuff cooking up this week. You've always got great stuff. Give us a little taste of what you've been writing.
Tease it.
Thanks. Yes, one story was about this kid in Westchester who has the 1960 NFL championship trophy in his living room. And it's this whole convoluted story of how he got it, but he has it. And I had to sniff him out, but I'm like, this story sounds ridiculous, but it's all word of mouth from him. And then we did our digging in our archives and things matched up, and he really has the trophy that belonged to the owner at the time. Somehow went to Florida, back to Westchester. Now it's in his living room. The Panorama bus, if you grew up in Northeast Philly, you knew what the Panorama bus was. And, you know, kids, I don't want to sound old, but like this, when I was a kid, the Super Bowl was something that other teams played in. It was a thing you watched on January on a Sunday. It was not something the Eagles played in. It was just something for other people. So this Panorama bus that went to the Super Bowl in 1981, Super Bowl 15, was like a myth, because it was like, wow, like these guys tried to drive to the Super Bowl when the Eagles were in the Super Bowl, and the bus broke down. It was like this legend, because A, the Eagles don't go to the Super Bowl, and B, like, of course, the bus is not going to get from Northeast Philly to New Orleans. So it sat up on this roof, untouched, still set, on our way to New Orleans, Super Bowl 15. And I just had, I have obviously strange ideas. And I was like, let me call these guys and dig this story back up. And it was fun to talk to them. And the one good thing about events like this is you can write really anything. Yeah. Like everybody wants to read about the Eagles. If you're going to write about the Panorama bus on the roof, this is the week to do
That's
it.
Right.
So
That's right.
It was fun.
You know, what I think is really fascinating is you kind of talk about this tradition of you and your dad getting the newspaper on a Sunday before the game. And now you're a newspaper writer. And you also told me, like, you're not out reading, like, Gustave Flaubert novels. Like, that's not your thing, right? You're a sports writer who loves reading sports material. And, like, it's cool that you are basically connecting to this ritual you have with your dad. Now you're doing it every day.
Yeah. I would not be here without, you know, my dad, my brother, all this love of sports and really newspapers. Like, my dad bring home the daily news from work every day. And then that's how I fell in love with looking at that. And I'm an emotional person. Like whenever I think like my dad and sports, it's like, it's bigger than like, it's just like, that's what it means. Like, it's just, it's bigger than like the game. Like the game is great, but it's like, I think of the bonds and stuff like that. And as a kid, I've just loved, like my dad read the paper. So I read the paper. Like my brother wanted to be a sports writer. I wanted to be a sports. It's like, we just, that's what we love to do. And to do it now, like I always ask people, like athletes, like, well, you do look back at like a kid and be like, wow, I can't believe I'm here, because that's what I do. Like when I walk in the Super Bowl on Monday night on media night, it's like it doesn't get lost to me. Like I'm not like too cool for like, wow, I'm at the Super Bowl. It's like we're not fans, but like, yeah, I still, but I allow myself to like marvel at how fortunate I am to, you know, walk by Tom Brady or to see these things. It's like, you know, I grew up as a rabid fanatic Eagles Philadelphia sports fan, and it's not like Men in Black where I can like hit the thing on and erase my memory. Like like, do I cheer for the Eagles? No. Like I do the job of being a, you know, impartial journalist, but in my heart I know how that feels to people. I know what a win means. I know what it feels like when they lose. Like,
yeah,
I love, and I love Philly. Like, so like to be doing this and to be I was a Daily News paper boy as a kid, and then to be able to do this, like, it doesn't get lost to me how, you know, fortunate I am to do what I do.
And I got to ask you, I mean, are you like the celebrity of the family? Because you're if your whole family, they live and breathe for these Sundays and these games every week. Are you like the guy everyone, oh my God, did you see that? Who did you meet this weekend? What's the conversation between you and your family at this point, especially now that you're at the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think people get like my dad's always, like I don't promote myself, you know, like, oh, look at my story. But my dad is always like, you would think I'm like 7 years old with the way he's like,
it's up on the fridge,
cheering me on. Yeah, yeah, sending like, pulse, like I'm in, you know, say you're in three different family group chats with different people, and he's sending the same tweet that I sent or story to three different group chats that I'm in. I'm like, can you at least like not do this with me? So like, but I do feel like, you know, like I'm cool with that. Like I appreciate my role because he's doing it out of like, he's proud of what I'm doing. And like, I would not be doing this without growing up going to 6:30 mass so I could watch the 1 o'clock football game and have those days. Like all of that as a kid,
yeah,
build up to where I'm at now.
Well, Matt, you get me teary eyed.
Matt, you really
here.
Set,
oh my
you
gosh.
Set the table perfectly for us for this special, Matt. We're so happy that you joined us. That was Matt Breen,
a
sports writer.
No?
I think we're going to blow right through that here. Alex.
Oh, sorry, Matt. You don't get a trivia question. Every other guest gets one, but you don't
all
get
right.
one.
All right.
That's because of our deep
thanks
writing.
And Matt will probably crush it.
Coming
I already
up,
know it.
Coming up after a short break, we have the hilarious Gabe Mihalik, who has been crushing it on social media all season long with his satire of sports talk radio callers. And then later in the hour, we have DJ 007 breaking down everything about Sunday's halftime show. Stick with us for this WHYY Eagles Super Bowl special. Ain't no stopping us now. We're on the way.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to WHYY's Super Bowl special, How the Eagles Bring Philadelphia Together. I'm Kevin McCrory alongside Cherry Gregg and Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We're talking fun, family, and football memories.
Yes, we are. I love the music that we're, I'm like, we're jamming in and out of the breaks. I love it.
We do want to hear from you this hour. Tell us what the Eagles have meant to your personal relationships. What are your traditions, your superstitions, your go-to party foods? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email us, studio2@whyy.org, or you can comment in the chat on our YouTube live stream. Now let's bring in our next guest. Joining us via Zoom is the often imitated, never replicated Gabe Mihalik. You probably know him better as Fake Sports Radio Caller and his Don from Derby character that he created that's gone viral on social media. Before we bring in Gabe, let's hear a clip of one of his Instagram reels.
Yeah, we go on and on. Cooper to John and his Teflon Bond. Saquon must have superpowers. Poster Jared Burst told him hit the showers. Get it calculated.
Well, Gabe, we didn't play the right clip there. That's all right. But let's.
He played the right one. I slipped him $50 to throw that in there. I'm trying to get some plays on Spotify here. I'm trying to make a living here. Okay?
That was you. Yeah, we did want to get to that one too. I was trying to set up more of your shtick, but you can just get into it. So tell us, Gabe. Don from Derby is your character, who kind of is a sports radio caller, and you know, he pours concrete. He lives in Delco, and tell us a little bit more about Don.
Yeah, so, I mean, first things first, I got to talk about your guys' jerseys. Like, are you guys okay? Like, did you raid the local Goodwill? Is Salvation Army? Like, did they run out?
Gabe, I didn't want to say anything.
Let's get into the story.
Dude, that looks like Chuck Bednarik's grandpa's jersey.
Do you want to know the story?
Yes.
Yeah, let's see. All right, I can defend mine. So you said it was from Goodwill. It is indeed. I got this jersey that I'm wearing. It's a Eagles Kelly Green 59 jersey. People might think it's Seth Joyner. It's not. I'll turn around and show you who it is.
All right, let's see.
Mike Mamula.
Oh, my goodness. It's a Mike Mamula.
It's a Mike Mamula jersey. And I will defend Mike Mamula after this. Now, but get this. I got this. The reason I got this jersey was because I was in Canada. And I saw it at a Goodwill or a thrift store in Canada. I couldn't believe I was looking at a Mike Mamula jersey in Canada. I've had it ever since I was a kid when I saw this. I said, I have to have it. I'm not even a jersey guy, honestly. But I saw this jersey in such a weird context. I was like, this is my jersey for the rest of my life.
It was a sign.
I will wear this until it falls off my body.
Now, Kevin, and it's Avi, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Do you guys know how Goodwill jerseys work? Like, you ain't finding a Saquon at Goodwill.
Well, let me tell you again.
It was Canada. The cats off.
It was
Sean Considine.
It was Canada. I was in Canada. Come on. I'm in the land of hockey, and I'm looking at this beautiful Mike Mamula jersey.
Here's the kismet too, okay? Avi and I did not plan this, but we both walk in today in number 59 Eagles jerseys. Now, mine, I got for my birthday when I was 10 years old because I loved Seth Joyner. And I still wear it today, and it has become my superstition. So mine's also 59. It's so faded. The numbers used to be green. I mean, I was playing tackle football, you know, in the fields in this thing back when I was a teenager.
I won't allow it because you can still fit this.
Yes.
You're wrong on this one, Gabe, but we'll let it go. You're just wrong on
this one. Mamula's the worst draft pick in Philadelphia, including Ben Simmons.
First of all, I would have loved to hear what Don from Derby thinks about Mike Mamula, but I will say, if you're listening right now and you're interested, look up Mike Mamula's career stats. You will be shocked at how effective he was. He's not he is made out to be. But go ahead, Don. Don, what's your problem with Mike Mamula?
He's an absolute disgrace, okay? He represents an era of Philadelphia football that was an absolute disaster. Rich Kotite, we were the laughing stock of the league. It led right into 99, and Andy Reid bailed us out. You do the math on that one, okay? And that's exemplary of how we draft in this city. We always go, we always get cute, we always outsmart ourselves, and we get the Mike Mamoulas of the world.
So, Gabe, for a lot of us, this two-week wait between winning the NFC Championship...
I've been chastened.
And going to the Super Bowl, it's such a long wait, right? You're feeling it every day. We've been talking around the building all week. When can Super Bowl Sunday get here? Not soon enough. Now, I want to know, how has Don been dealing with that wait?
I'm going crazy over here, okay? It's a disgrace. All the shenanigans and the media day and the Pro Bowl. Oh, we're going to watch the Pro Bowl. We're going to watch these guys play Nintendo with each other, okay? So then I flip over to the Sixers. They're up 30 points, only to squander it quicker than a union paycheck at Delaware Parks, okay? So I flip it over to the Grammys, and honestly, if it ain't blow the whistle right now, I ain't interested,
all
okay?
Right.
So the bottom line is this has felt like 2 months. It's an absolute – it's a disgrace. They shouldn't be doing all this shenanigans. Saquon's got to give a speech last night. He's got the biggest game of his life on Sunday, okay? It's a disgrace. The whole shebang, it's all garbage, okay? I'm not going to watch the halftime show. I'm trying to watch some football.
Don's on edge.
All right. Wow.
All right. But we do want to get into your blow the whistle parody. We want to talk about that. But I also just want to hear a little bit from you personally. Like, you built this character around basically the group chat you have with your family.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about what sports and specifically the Eagles really have meant personally to, like, the relationships you have in your life.
Yep. So like I told you last time, like, that character, which you can tell is just me dialed up about 3%.
That's it. That's all it.
All of that content is just from my group text with my brothers and my cousin. We've been watching the Eagles together our entire lives. As a matter of fact, I was just getting this text as I was hopping on. My cousin said, "This team is going to give us one of the greatest moments of our lives. We just have to keep the same mojo. That's on us. We do our part and they'll do theirs." All outside right. of the births of our children, this is fitting to be the happiest moment of our mortal lives. I came in like, but so that's my, those
subtle.
Are my people.
I like that. Subtle.
Yep. And when it comes to like regular season games or like a Super Bowl that someone else is playing in, whatever, I'll go to parties. I'll hang out with other people. When it comes to the Eagles championship games, we have like a blood pact that we will watch it with nobody else except for this group chat. And it's because we don't know what could happen. You know, you're going to see us at our worst and our best and we need room to cry, you know, we need room for like all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So that's my family, cousins and brothers who, this is where the character comes from. This is where my love from the Eagles has, you know, been my whole life.
By the way, Gerard's comments says, "I sit in my easy chair before every game quietly and intently to study every play. I want to observe that millisecond when Saquon Barkley busts loose for a TD."
So many people looking forward to that moment. Yeah.
The intensity.
And so I got to ask Gabe about, we showed a little bit of that clip that went, I would say, viral of you doing a rap version, your own rap version cover of Blow the Whistle. And I saw that and I thought that was fire, first of all.
Thank you. You have serious
skills. And I shared it with everybody I know.
That makes me so happy.
First of all, what made you decide to do that and jump on this Blow the Whistle train? Yeah.
So this ain't my first rodeo with an Eagles run. You know, I was there. I was about 13 or 14 in 04. And then all those playoff runs in between. And then obviously 2017, 2022. A lot of Phillies runs. And what I notice is people will make these songs, you know, they'll kind of remix a song and put in all the great stuff that we're flexing about our team. And so I'm watching all these Gilly videos and I'm like, oh, Gilly's going to do it. You know, he's going to remix this song and I'm waiting. I'm like, man, he ain't doing it. And if nobody's going to do it, I'll do it. You know, I've rapped since I was a little kid and it's not something I've been doing a lot lately. But I was like, I just had this vision for it. So I called my buddy from high school. I haven't talked to him in like 15 years. And I said, dude, we're going to do this, but we got to turn it around in like 24 hours if we wanted to get on Spotify in time. And we did. We wrote it, recorded it, edited it, posted it within 24 hours. And there it is, Blow the Whistle remix.
Yeah. Can we play a little bit of that? I know we cut it off early, but I was wondering if we could just play because it is skillfully done. You tie so many elements of Philadelphia into this rap. It was just amazing.
Saquon Barkley's going to rush for 205 rushing
yards. Oh, that's the
other clip.
He's on a record-breaking tour, John. He's breaking every single record in the league except...
Right. Well, you know what, though? We were planning on doing it.
Yeah, I got something better.
You got a better version. We get our own version.
Because listen, yeah. I already made all your levels on your microphones peak because I went a little too hard earlier. Okay. And the rap is very aggressive. It's got that, you know, Don from Darby type of tune. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you the second verse of it, but more in like an NPR vibe.
Sure.
Okay? More like a spoken word poetry. Okay?
So this is your remix of
Blow
the Whistle.
I'm going to do some snaps for you.
But
snaps are very encouraged.
For the spoken word. Y'all.
Okay. So it's Gabe's version of Blow the Whistle, but with an NPR vibe.
Yes.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's the second verse. You're going to have to go on Spotify to hear the whole thing.
All right,
here we go. KC, come get some. I ain't talking about Cabela's when I say let's hunt. Blankenship, JD, and CJG. Jay picking off Mahomes with an INT. Take it to the crib like restless babies. Taylor and Travis, find the exit, ladies. It's Andy Reid, so you know it's all gravy. Don't choke it up like you did against Brady. Bird gang, boy, we flocked up. Like Akon, Quinion got you locked up. And when the clock's up, we'll sing Fly, Eagles, Fly, throw our rocks up. Your dynasty is going to need IV when we got it ready to die like B.I.G. Xfinity Live, sitting VIP. If you ain't Gilly, Big Dom's going to have to CID.
Whoa! Flocked up, locked up, clocked up, rocked up. That is so...
Look, I'd go to the coffee house for that one.
Look, super claps. All of that. Claps and snaps.
All right. Well, I know we're closing here. You want a trivia question before you go?
Dude, I would love... I was actually really looking forward to it.
You ready?
Thank you, by the way. You want one about the half Super Bowl halftime show, Super Bowl commercials, or general Super Bowl?
Oh man, I was like, is he going to say anything about football? Okay.
No.
No, I'm going to go with the last one, general Super Bowl.
Okay.
I'll take my chance.
Okay. I got to give you a tougher one.
I know, he's so good.
The record for most Super Bowl losses is 5, a mark held by 2 franchises. Name either one.
Okay, so I'm going to say the Buffalo Bills.
Oh!
That
they
was
got
close.
4.
They got four in a row, and I just figured they had a fifth one somewhere. All right. Let me take one more guess. Say it's not the Eagles, is it? No. The Steelers?
Oh, gosh. No, it's the Broncos and the Patriots, sir.
Oh.
The Broncos, lost a bunch.
The Patriots won a lot and lost a lot, too.
And lost a lot, yep.
Wow.
Including once to us.
Are we playing the GOAT on Sunday, or is Brady the GOAT?
Great question.
Oh, that's a good
one. Because I'm going to say, listen, Patrick Mahomes is done. Okay. He's going to be Patrick Mahomes by the time this team's done with
it. I didn't realize this was
Patrick Mahomeless. I love
he's
it.
He's going to be Patrick Mahomeless within 5 years when Teflon Bond and his defense are done with him. Okay. Hey, Patty Cakes, meet Jalen Carter. Okay. More disruptive than road work on the Blue Route on a Friday. Okay. Good luck with that.
Thank you so much, Gabe.
It.
That was the great Gabe Malhalik joining us here with his Don from Darby character. Wonderful to have you. Go Birds. Hope everything's going well in Delco. Thanks, Gabe.
Oh, I love him, dog.
I can't believe that. So good. So we want to hear from you, of course. Keep those comments coming about what the Eagles have meant to your personal relationships and your life, what your traditions and superstitions and go-to party foods are. You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. You can comment on the YouTube live stream. Yeah, go ahead,
Jared. Can I read this comment from Hillary? In 2018 Super Bowl, we were new parents with an infant. I remember my husband pumping our baby up in the air for every touchdown that night. Our joke is that her baby magic won the Super Bowl.
That's awesome.
That's such a cute image. It's like, oh, it's so cute. I love people.
I have to say, my daughter was also an infant during the last Super Bowl, and we lost. So, you know, we need to reverse the juju on my particular progeny. But for our next segment, we just wanted to chat, I think, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I think is baffling to people is, like, why is the NFL and the Super Bowl so popular? Mm. And I want to pose that question to you guys because – hey, first of all, let's be honest, it's a brutal game. We know that the ramifications of playing it are severe. The league has been beset by scandal after scandal after scandal. And yet, Every single year, without fail, if you look at what are the most watched live television programs or television programs in general in America, it's football game, football game, football game, football game, football game, and like all the way down the list. So what do you think, Cherry? Like, what, you grew up in a football family. Like, what is it about the NFL? What is it about football that you think creates this community?
I think, well, number one, I think they have the perfect amount of games.
You know, that's the perfect.
It's every Sunday, and we're, you know, my family is big in the church, so it was like a ritual. You go to church, and then you watch football, and then we would be over at my grandparents' house, and they would cook, and so football would be on, and that's just what you did.
I think that the tie into the ritual aspect is so important. People really underestimate that.
I also think that, you know, and we heard Matt talk about it, like the sense of community that is built, and it's also just the battle of the wills. I mean, like, people love to see man-to-man battle of the wills, and you get to root for your team and then talk trash if they win.
Especially in the playoffs, right?
Where
it's do or die. If you compare to the other four sports, of course, it's not, right?
So every
the playoffs game. Build up so much intensity, and then you have an opportunity for an event, right? This communal thing that you can be together to do together, and it's all going to happen. Either they're going to win or they're going to lose, and you're there together to do it.
And it's American. Like, it's like...
But
it's
baseball's
very,
American.
No, no, but I mean, like, it's so...
Basketball's essentially American.
It is, but, I mean, other countries sort of have created their own versions of these games, but football, like American football, is just other teams. They're like, we don't even call. We did that show. They would talk about soccer. We can't even say, you know, we call it football. No, but American football is so unique. It's so special.
You're talking about American exceptionalism, basically.
Basically.
No, but I think you guys are spot on. The only area I disagree with it is, I think inherently as a sport, it's not a particularly good game. That's just always been my take. And it's become like...
Say what?
I'm trying to let you lay this out. Like,
then let me lay it out. I don't think if you actually, like, were an alien coming down to planet Earth and you looked at all the major sports, you would say basketball, wow, it's so fast-paced. It's so intuitive. My wife, who cares nothing about sports, she enjoys watching a basketball game. She even can enjoy watching a soccer game. Even a baseball game because of the ambiance, the outdoors. Football, she looks at it and she goes, first of all, you can't even see the players' faces. It stops and starts constantly. There are tons of rules. It's the most over-litigated game in the world. And so for me, the popularity of football is in some ways in spite of the game. Yes, there are aspects of it that are aesthetically appealing. Yes, the television product's very good. But for me, the appeal of it is exactly what you said first, Jerry. It's the scarcity of the games. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the way it ties in to ritual.
Yeah.
It's hard to have a ritual around 82 freaking basketball games or 162 baseball games. But in a world where we're just like flooded with so much content, there's content everywhere. The ability to have something that exists as an event, real world thing that you can come together with people, that's what's special about it.
And the beautiful thing is that it works, right? You can find liberal America, conservative America. They come together for football. And once a conversation about football happens, who knows what can happen after that?
Yeah, and one thing in Philly, you can go in any neighborhood. You say, go Birds. The response is, go Birds.
The track you're hearing right now is from the 1981 Frankie Beverly Live in New Orleans album, which Jalen Hurts has said this week was his fave. And coming up, we're talking about the intersection of sports and music and the rise of hip-hop in NFL culture with DJ 007. Keep on emailing and calling and commenting. We'll be right back on Studio 2's Eagle Special. I've got something
I want to... Each morning... It's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to pray for times like this, to rhyme like this, so I had to grind like that, to shine like this. And
welcome back to WHYY's Super Bowl special, How the Eagles Bring Philadelphia Together. I'm Kevin McCrory alongside Cherry Gregg and Avi Wolfman Arendt. We're talking fun, family, football memories, and now music, because that's all wrapped up in there too, yes. Of course. And joining us live in studio is DJ 007. Thank you for being here.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of this special day.
Absolutely. Yes. Our pleasure. So tell us about this rise of, really, it feels like hip-hop has taken the center stage in the sports conversation these days.
Absolutely. You know, I've always felt like hip-hop is ahead of the curve on creating an environment that's really powerful. And then with sports being so powerful, especially right here in the best city in the world, being Philadelphia,
right.
You know, when you put that in touch with the music, it's just a great intersection of energy. That's where we are now.
Yeah, it's sort of like been a rise, though, because it wasn't always this way. But it seems like in the past few years, hip hop has taken center stage. And I think about the song we just heard by Meek Mill, Dreams and Nightmares. Were you surprised when that became the song for the Eagles?
I was very surprised, but then again, I should not have been surprised, just because that was one of the biggest songs in nightlife, one of the biggest songs that, you know, was just moving around. So when the Eagles, who, you know, is always leading in everything, when they attached to that song, it made sense. It made sense for the city.
Yeah, Meek Mill, big Philly guy.
Absolutely.
People love him, and they just chose that song. Are there any other memorable hip-hop songs that you think just sort of like epitomize what it means to play sports? And because a lot of hip-hop songs, I think, are hype songs.
Right. You know what? It's funny that you say that. It's going to be Too Short right now. Mm-hmm. I've been playing the song, you know, forever in the club, playing it forever in parties. But the
it's been
way
one of my
that,
favorite songs. I'm a listen, huge Too Short
we,
fan.
We have the clip, actually. Let's make sure the audience knows the song. We've got the clip of the Too Short song, Blow the Whistle. Let's hear a little bit of that.
What's my favorite word? Why they gotta say it like short? You know they can't play on my court, can't hang with the big dogs, stay on the porch. Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle.
Now that feels to me, I mean, he's talking about sports in this, and it's so he makes so many analogies. By the way, Too Short is from the West Coast, been around for decades at this Ever. Point. That's a banger that's been around for a couple of decades, at least 15 years. That song, almost 20 at this point.
Okay.
Why do you think that song got picked up and everybody just sort of globbed onto it?
I have to give all props to Gilly.
Yeah, gotta give Gilly.
Listen to me. When we talk about someone being able to motivate people, the way that he motivated people to attach that song to the Eagles is truly, truly, truly what an influencer does. That song has been something that I've been playing, that DJs have been playing forever. But for him to influence that song and the Eagles to create, you know, just a connection, it's magic.
Yeah, and everybody was dancing to that song. We danced to that song. It's so danceable. Avi leaned all the way in, by the way. Shout out to my co-host over there.
We all did, yeah.
But it was like, it just sort of, and you're right, people of all ages, all parts of the city, all class, it just brought everybody together.
You know what's funny about that? My mother, who is not a hip-hop fan, right? My mother called me a few days ago. She said, you ever heard this song? And I was like, you know, expecting for her to say something about the Temptations or what have you. Sorry, Mom. She was like, it's this new song, this Blow the Whistle song? Are you familiar with that, son? And I just started laughing. I was just like, you know what? If it made it to my mother, then it's gone everywhere.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So we want to talk a little bit about the halftime act this year. We got Kendrick Lamar. I'm really, really looking forward to this. If the Eagles were not playing in the Super Bowl, that would be like the number one thing that I'd be looking forward to watch. Let's play a song from Kendrick. And when someone asks me what my favorite condiment is, this is what I tell them.
Hey. Mustard! But somebody gotta do it, got my foot up on the gas, but somebody gotta do it. Turn this TV off, turn this TV off, turn this TV off, turn this TV off.
So I'm curious, what are you watching for in the halftime
Why
show
is it mustard,
year?
Not ketchup? I don't know that. Because
it's DJ Mustard.
Because it's DJ Mustard,
together.
Which was the producer, or is the producer of the song.
And
so he was
like
really
us.
Shouting out the producer, but
is there a DJ Ketchup or Relish or anything?
You could be them.
Oh, I could be
you
that.
Could do that.
That could be like the Eagles version, DJ Relish because of the green.
I'm going to let you do that.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to let you do that.
So what are you looking forward to most in the halftime show?
The question is, what song will Kendrick perform or not perform on the halftime show? Mm. Will he do Not Like Us? That's what I need to know.
Now, give the backstory for folks that don't know. Why is this so controversial about whether he would play? Because Not Like Us just won big at the Grammys. People would normally say, if your big hit song, of course you'd play it. So why is this?
Why would you hit pause on that?
Okay, so the best way I'm going to put it is this.
Yeah, your NPR answer here.
Right. That song is not very favorable of a very, very, very huge artist. And that huge artist has influence throughout the entire world. So the question is, does NFL want to connect themselves to someone who's going to play a song who's not favorable to a very, very, very big artist?
This is business.
And by the way, you are referring to the Kendrick versus Drake battle that has been going on for years that culminated over the summer with Not Like Us.
Co-sign everything you're saying. It's a hater song,
but it's like the most memorable dancey hater song ever.
You know what? I'm going to co-sign everything that you just said. And you know what else? Above that, just speaking from a DJ's point of view, I've been playing it. It's probably top five song in the club and the parties right now. I just want to know if he's going to do the song or not.
Yeah, and everybody knows that song, and I think everybody wants to hear it. So to not play it is, you know, would be a statement.
That would be wild.
Yeah, but there's a lawsuit currently pending between Drake's suit.
It would be wild, but somebody might say it might be smart, too.
Yeah.
Now, my point of view on this, though, is Kendrick is going to raise the bar no matter what. Yeah. If he plays that song or not, he's going to put on a show that's going to be memorable. Because he already stole the show when they did it in L.A. a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he was with Dr. Dre. And he just came out and did that performance that was just visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting something really big and interesting from him. Like, what do you think that the average viewer who isn't like a huge Kendrick fan should look forward to?
I think that they should look forward to a lot of energy, and I also think that they should look forward to not just the music, but just I believe that his show is going to be very cinematic, because I think that him and his team knows that he's not necessarily as big of a staple artist as other artists have been to do the Super Bowl. So I believe his team, from the visual aspect, is going to make sure that even if you don't know the songs, the colors and just all of those type of things draw you in.
Yeah. And I think about the type of songs and the type of artists that are chosen to be the Super Bowl halftime centerpiece. And you think about the bigness of the music, right? Like big band, I mean, big sound. Not Like Us has that. That song we just played has that big sound. So what does it take? I mean, because he's going to have to really bring it in order to keep everybody's attention.
I think he has stadium anthems. That's how I think of it. He has anthems that will ring off in stadiums. They're big sounding. They're massive. There's a lot of instrumentation that Mustard as the producer put into them. And I really feel as though just some music sounds better loud. Now, me as a DJ, I play everything loud. Right. But some songs just sound better when they're loud. And I feel as though he has a lot of those.
Now, we were talking, we played a little clip earlier of Frankie Beverly, and Jalen Hurts said this week when asked, do you like Kendrick or do you like Drake? Jalen Hurts said, I don't listen to any of that. I love Frankie Beverly. Do you buy
From
that?
Philly.
Do you buy that?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But you know what I do buy?
Wait, he you has guys paid think he's lying?
He has paid attention to his media training, which has told him, do not pick a side
Stay
in something that has nothing to do with you the week before the biggest game of your life thus far. He's paid attention to his PR people.
Yeah, keep all the fans.
Wait. No, he's an old soul. He legitimately likes Frankie Beverly.
Yeah. I wish we had a picture of one of his last outfits.
Both can be true.
Yeah, look very 90s.
You know what I was going to say? Both can be true, but I can guarantee you that they're not probably playing Frankie Beverly and Maze in the locker room before they run out.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Do you want a trivia question before you go? Be honest. It'll be about the halftime show.
Absolutely. Because I was prepping for the X and O's thing because I didn't know what direction you were going to go.
Okay.
But I'm here for it.
All right, here we go. 1993 was the year that changed it all for the Super Bowl halftime show with the first mega pop act. Who was the performer? 93.
93.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big star.
Yeah, who was big then?
Big.
You want to give me the initials? Or?
It's too easy if I give the initials. It's very easy if I give the initials.
I want to win. What's the initials?
MJ.
Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
But what's fascinating, right, if you go back into the history of the Super Bowl halftime act, it's marching bands and grambling stage.
They were not big stars.
Not big names. And then in Michael Jackson, that year is like when it all tips and it becomes huge stars.
He's been changing everything since day one.
Yeah.
That's true. That's 100%
he changed the game.
True.
By the way, shout out to Kendrick Lamar because he is the first solo rap artist to ever headline. Because you got to remember when Dr. Dre, it was like groups. Uh-huh, it's never been a solo rap artist that has been the headliner for a Super Bowl. So, you know, that's according to the New York Times, by the way. I will give a tribute that. But I thought that was a pretty big deal. That's a pretty, a super when we talk about deal. The rise of hip hop. Yeah,
that's a super big deal. And shout out to all the Kendrick fans who have been riding with him before he got to this level. You know, him as an artist, he's been doing it for a very long time. So I have to shout out all of those that have been his day one fans.
Yeah. Have you been a day one?
I have not been a day one fan, okay? Because if I say yes, somebody's going to ask me about a mixtape or something when I leave here. You know how Philly is. I have not been a day one, but I will say I'm a big supporter once I got on the Kendrick train.
Yeah.
Kind of like me and the Eagles.
So we're going to talk a little bit about like kind of game day superstitions and rituals and stuff. You want to stick around a couple minutes and join
us? I'm here for it. Let's have fun.
All right. We do want to hear from our audience, though. Tell us what the Eagles have meant to the personal relationships in your life. What are your traditions, your superstitions, your go-to party foods? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email us, studio2@whyy.org, or comment in the chat on the YouTube live stream.
Yeah, and I do. We have a caller online, great. By the way. We want to bring in Kathleen from Chestnut Hill. Kathleen, you're on Studio 2's special Eagles Super Bowl show. What's your question or comment?
Yay, comment. I have no memories because in my very long life living in Philadelphia on and off, I never watched football. I just wasn't a fan. I mean, I love the Eagles because they were my home team. However, I have a grandson who is now 8. 2 years ago, he became enamored of the Eagles, and nobody knows why. His father never went to a football game. We call him a football savant. He can comment on a game better than Bill Belichick. For example, I've started watching football for the last 2 years, and I now love the Eagles.
Love it.
Yay!
Love them. I read something about a corner quarterback, and I thought it was a typo. So I asked Malcolm, I said, is there a corner quarterback? And he said, yes. And he gave me a technical explanation. I still don't know what it was, but it was perfect. And I mean, the kid is amazing.
Well, thank you so much.
Shout out to your grandson.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ash Cashley. Thank you.
Football fan because of
we lost Kathleen. No, that was right. Kathleen from Chestnut Hill.
Yeah, what I love about that is, you know, we've been kind of talking about how sports, the Eagles, connect generations, right? So there we go. We have a grandmother who now, you know, has a first question for her grandson that's going to get them talking.
Yes.
And that's going to build their bond now, and their relationship. And that's something they're both going to be remembering for years to come.
And now she is a passionate Eagles fan after all these years. So we're talking superstitions.
Yes, and rituals.
And rituals. By the way, I have to mention, I don't have superstitions, but I want to talk about 2018. I don't know if you guys remember, the Philadelphia Eagles at the time had a lot of devout Christians on the team. You had Carson Wentz, you had Nick Foles, you had Coach Doug Peterson, and the team would pray before every single game. And that's them. If you're watching us on YouTube, that's Wentz leading a prayer for the team. And I remember interviewing the late Reverend Herb Lusk, who also, he's a former Philadelphia Eagle, was one of the first Eagles to pray in the end zone after a touchdown. He became their team chaplain. Mm-hmm. He said the coach never missed a Bible study. And he believed that there was a divine connection, and that is why the Eagles were going to win the Super Bowl. And he told me that in November of 2017, and look what happened at the Super Bowl. I'm just saying.
Wow. Okay.
I'm throwing that out there as a ritual. Yeah. Having a prayer before every game. I don't know how y'all feel about that.
Well, I got to say, I've already been, as I always say, if we win, it was God's plan. And if we lose, God took the day off.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
But if we're talking about superstitions, I've already been clowned a bit for wearing this old ratty jersey. Mm. But the reason, I can't even wash this thing. It's just
what is on there? What is on that?
Any sorts of random stuff I spilled on myself over the years ends up on this jersey. Don't look too hard, Jerry.
I'm not. I'm closing my eyes.
But I went back in time and I looked at the 2017-18 season. When we won the Super Bowl that day, I was wearing this shirt, and I have this great picture that's been on my refrigerator since then of me with my son Carver on my shoulders, and like that's just so joyful to me, and it's all
that,
wrapped
that
up
is
in this
eagle.
It is this
that
jersey,
is that
the
eagle.
Old school eagle.
Yes.
That's at my brother-in-law Michael's house, and so this weekend I'll be wearing this jersey again, and I will be at my brother-in-law Michael's house again, and that was the year they won, and the year they lost 2 years ago, I was not wearing this jersey, and I was at my own house.
That's proof.
So
okay. Right there, that's exhibit A.
Superstition. That's okay. My ritual.
So here's my question about your jersey, right? Yeah. Did you wash it in between then or now? Or did you just hit it with a Febreze or anything? Like, just,
that's a really important question.
That's a
question.
Guess. Yes, we need to know.
No comment.
That's the answer.
And that's the smell. I don't really have any big superstitions, but I did, you guys rightly pointed out that I did shave by coincidence right before the first Eagles playoff game this year. And then when they started winning, I did get nervous about shaving again. So I haven't shaved, and this is why I look the way I look. And I'm really, really sorry about it, but it'll be shaved soon. So.
I love the look, Avi.
You know what?
Don't lie.
You know, you just got to shape it up a little bit. That's it.
But you can't shape it. I'm not.
No, you can't touch it until after Sunday.
Yeah.
But for the parade, we're going to claim it.
You think I should keep it after this?
Don't ask me because I like beards.
No. You can't shave until they lose, I think, right?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You know what I think? This is what I think you should do. I think that if you have to cut it, you should bring a barber in studio and make it a thing.
That's
a good one.
This is a man who knows about promotion. That's smart.
You should listen to me. You should bring a barber in, make it a thing. And then save the hair. Gotta save the hair.
Gotta save the hair.
That's a superstition. That's next level.
007. He knows music. He knows style. He knows promotion. What doesn't he know? Thank you so much for being with us.
I love
my
job.
That's right.
Stick with us into the next hour. The special continues, and we are going to talk about more about the Philly fans. Are we really as bad as we get the reputation for, or is that overblown? We're going to get into all that right after a short break.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to WHYY's Super Bowl special, How the Eagles Bring Philadelphia Together. I'm Kevin McCrory alongside Cherry Gregg and Avi Wolfmaner.
Why did we play Spoon there?
I'll tell you why, Avi. We were talking about rituals and superstitions.
Yeah.
And for me, another ritual is win or lose after the game, we go dance party. Okay.
My whole family goes dance party. That's my kind of party.
I got four kids from ages 3, 5, 8, and 10.
Shout
okay,
out to the kids.
Including the two little girls, and they want to dance. So sometimes we're throwing on Frozen songs, but that has been my go to song there.
I love it.
And here he says, "Blow out that cherry bomb." Yeah, the Chiefs are. Red, cherry-ish. We're going to blow out that cherry bomb.
I love that.
That was the kind of deep thing. When I was putting this together, that was there. I wasn't expecting to be challenged and quizzed on
it. No, because all the other songs had a connection.
It always adds up, Bobby.
I was just curious. Okay, go back to your read.
Sorry.
I think we ask questions here. We're curious.
And I like the idea of dance parties, by the way. That's my kind of party.
While I'm on the subject, I got to say, when we lost the last Super Bowl, I was like, oh my God, we're going to lose. But you know what? I got an example to set in the house, right?
Yeah.
Went over to the record player. I queued that thing up. As soon as it was over, boom, Prince.
That's
and
right.
And we just danced to Prince.
That's how you do it, though. You keep the spirits high.
Exactly.
Get rid of the bad vibes. You have to expel fresh vibes. Yeah. I do believe that.
Yeah, blow them out and just come back. Reset.
I do believe that,
All right.
So we're talking personal relationships this hour. Mm-hmm. And I think when a lot of people think about how football has deepened their personal relationships, they think about their dad. And so now joining us live in studio is a local writer who published a book about this very subject. Tom McAllister is the author of Bury Me in My Jersey, a memoir of my father, football, and Philly. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. I got to say, I'm the exact, like, after a loss, my whole strategy is just to wallow in the worst vibes possible. I don't know if that's what I recommend to everyone.
But that's another way, because then you sort of purge it by sinking deeper into the abyss, well, into the crevasse.
And you feel it when you have to feel it, and then you let it go, right?
Yeah, well, sometimes.
But you don't have kids, right?
No, yeah,
so
no.
So once I you have just, kids, the switch flips, because it's like, you know what? Come on, what am I going to do? So that's set an example.
We watch every year, we watch the Super Bowl with my wife's brothers and her their families, and his the host, his oldest daughter, was old enough to care about the Eagles for the first time when they lost in the Super Bowl, and she was devastated when they lost. And it was a different feel. Then you have to say, like, oh, it's not that bad. You know,
don't spiral.
Even though I was lying.
So wait, I gotta ask real quick before we get into the big conversation. Your book's called Bury Me in My Jersey, but let's talk about the sweater.
The sweater,
You said there's a story behind the sweater, and for those who are listening, you are wearing Kelly Green Eagles. It's a cardigan, right?
It's nice.
It's like a deep, V-neck. a very deep V.
I call that an old man sweater.
It has
an eagle on the
Eagles logo.
There are some food stains on the sleeves that are hard to.
It looks like something Dick Vermeil might have worn.
This is Vermeil. This is my dad's sweater. And so my dad died in 2003, which is part of the book and writing about kind of dealing with that. And a lot of our relationship was built through watching football together because he worked all the time. He was home on Sundays, but most of the time on weekdays, he was working 12, 13 hour days. But the sweater, I can't call it a good luck sweater. I was thinking about that because I've seen the Eagles lose two Super Bowls while wearing it. But I've seen them win one. I think my dad may have worn it when they lost in 1980 also. So. But yeah, this is the sweater that comes out for the big games for sure.
So wow. If you wear any condition, piece of paraphernalia long enough watching Eagles game, it's a good luck and it's a bad luck.
That's true. It's seen every kind of up and down with the team.
Tell us about the book, how that come together, and give us, I guess, a sense of the relationship you had with your dad and how
that happened. It started with me. I was just writing. I went to graduate school for creative writing, and I was trying to write an essay about being a big sports fan because a lot of people in the creative writing program were not sports fans, and I felt like they would talk to me like they were anthropologists trying to understand what was happening inside my brain during games. And I was writing really boring, bad essays that were just like really X's and O's. They were focused on the game. And every now and then I would mention something about my dad, and everyone would say, that's the interesting part. That's the part, the thing that people care about is where are, you know, why do you care about it? And the more I thought about it, I realized, you know, how much of my relationship with my dad was built around talking about sports, watching sports, listening to sports radio in the car, arguing about our favorite athletes, and we had very different favorites.
Really? What were the differences?
Well, the biggest fight was over not football. It was Charles Barkley. He was he hated Barkley. Yeah, and I was young and I loved the whole thing.
The round mound, baby.
Yeah. He hated. He was very old fashioned, a player demanding a trade and all that stuff. Yeah. But and so a lot of the book then eventually ends up writing or talking a lot more about the relationships you build, you know, through sports, realizing how many of my friendships and family relationships are at least started, or at least in part, built around the ritual. I heard you all were talking about the ritual earlier.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, because my dad loves football, present tense. And I think about being a kid, and that is how you spend time with your dad. That's how you get FaceTime, especially with a father who works a lot, like you said. Just sort of like, can you have like an early memory of just when your dad looked at you and were like, you're getting it. You're finally getting the game.
Yeah. I begged him. He took us to an Eagles Broncos game in, God, it must have been 1992. They beat the Broncos 30-0. I remember that as vividly as you can remember anything. I was 10 years old, and it was the greatest thing in the world. At that point, there was no turning back. I was going to be an Eagles fan for the rest of my life. Got the full vet experience, both good and bad. We saw the Eagles win 30-0. It was the battle of the running quarterbacks, Randall on the Eagles side, John Elway on the Broncos side, and they just crushed them. And I thought, and that was like such an indelible moment in our lives. My brother was there as well, of course.
So your That's dad beautiful. Passed away, and you chronicle that in the book. Tell us about, like, I guess now when you think back to your relationship with your dad, how much is it truly tied up in the Eagles?
A lot. And then there are parts that I, you know, the more I thought about it, I realized there were things that I didn't pay attention to that I wished I had. You know, I was 21 when he died, or I was 20 when he died. And, you know, things that you just take for granted as a teenager and that kind of stuff. But a lot of, like, big formative moments. You remember watching these big games together, and you remember, not even that, again, watching. I don't think he cared so much about reading all the draft coverage and all the stats the way that I did, but I would, every time we had to go to the library in school, I would check out the sports record books and just, like, read sports records for some reason. And then I would go home and tell him about these things, and he would just listen the way I guess you do to your kid, because you're happy to be talking with him about something. Mm-hmm. And so in a lot of ways, that was, I felt like, the language that we had. We had a good relationship, but definitely sports was like the inroads to talking about anything.
And it wasn't just your dad, right? So you, there's a lot of other people in your life that you connected with over the Birds. And so am I understanding right that you spent some time in the 700 level of the Vet?
Oh, yeah.
And so that's, for those that don't know, the Veterans Stadium was the stadium that preceded the current stadium. And it was an interesting place. And the 700 level is very, very, very far from the field where all sorts of things can happen. So what did you see? And who did you meet up in the 700 level?
You meet every kind of person. I'll tell you, though, where I met the most interesting people was not even in the Vet, but outside the Vet.
Yeah.
Sleeping out on the street for playoff tickets in 2002, or 2001 and 2002. My best friend and I, we were on winter break from college. We went out and just slept on the ground outside the Vet. 3,000, 4,000 people in line.
Oh my God.
And it was chaos because there was no, they didn't expect that to happen. It was, I think, the night after Christmas. It was 10 degrees out and people were just starting trash can fires. People were drinking, obviously. There was a lot of, it was a big mess out there. People were trying to cut in line. And you saw, I was going to say the best and worst of humanity, but maybe not so much the best.
No, because, well, the best is the passion, right?
Yeah.
No, but it's so your dad, it kind of sounds like he's pretty cool, calm, and collected. And it wasn't like it was one of those relationships built on sports and getting super like riled up over sports. But then there must have been other people in your life who filled that void of being the people that you kind of – you sort of celebrated and you raged with.
Oh, yeah. My older brother is one for sure.
Yeah.
I remember another vivid memory is the first Eagles playoff win that I saw was when they beat the Saints in – I'm going to say 92.
Yep.
Yeah, they beat the Saints. Reggie White had a safety in that game. Mm. And my brother and I were running out in the street, banging pots and pans and just like screaming, people and other, you know, neighbors coming out and yelling with us.
On that note, by the way, Dandelion on YouTube says, when you live in a row home and you hear the cheers through the walls, it's just that much more joyful. That's a beautiful claim, man.
Yeah, I grew up in Roxborough, row home there. And yeah, you heard every sound.
Good and bad. Yeah. We were talking 700 level. I have to give my favorite thing about the 700 level, and this was for Phillies games. You could go to the Acme and you could buy a pack of hot dogs. And within the pack of hot dogs, there literally was tickets to the Phillies game in the 700 level.
Giving them away.
Wow. You would rinse off this plastic thing inside the hot dog packet, and then you could take that to the game, and you could go into the game. Multiple tickets for one pack of, I believe they were like ballpark Franks or Hatfield.
People
Franks
were buying those ballparks.
Yeah.
So that's how cheap it was to get into the 700 level. Not only could you feed yourself, you could get a ticket to the game.
That is so beautiful.
That's when people say Philadelphia doesn't have a culture, but there it is.
And I gotta ask you this, Tom, because we've been talking about superstitions. Talking about rituals. Did your family have any superstitions or rituals tied to the game besides the wearing of the sweater?
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely specific good luck jerseys but they would rotate in and out based on our whims. But when I was in college and I would watch with my friends, we all had assigned seats that we would sit in. And definitely a rule that still applies when I'm watching with my family now is that if you are out of the room when something good happens for the Eagles, you have got to stay out of the room.
You're banished.
Absolutely, yeah.
From the game.
And by the same token, let's say you're late for showing. We had someone who showed up late to watch the Rams game, and the Eagles were up, and we were like, yeah, I don't know if we should let him in. We were having a vote on whether he should come in. And the game did turn pretty badly after he came in. Mm. So that's the biggest
one. Has he apologized?
No, he's an unapologetic.
Like, you got to be on time, man.
Yeah.
messing up the game.
While we're on the subject of ritual superstition, here's my other one. Okay. In my house, you got the TV in the living room. Mm-hmm. And then in the kitchen, I've got a speaker system so that I can listen to the radio broadcast in the kitchen and watch the game in the living room. But the time is off.
Yeah, they can't.
So the radio is always earlier. So if you're really nervous, you run to the kitchen and listen to what happens. And then you can run back out and watch what happened because there's a delay. So especially
or not watch if
or not happy. Watch
yeah if it's bad just
so that's
yeah,
one of my rituals eyes. Is running back and forth from kitchen to living room and
you get your steps in
be like big place guy and I run back
but you spoil it for everybody else
not necessarily this is more like if I'm at my house with my kids okay, and I want okay. them to pay attention to got something it, it's it. Like oh hey let's watch it's about to happen
got it that makes more sense we did want to talk about the Eagles fan reputation, right, guys?
Yeah. Yes, we got to talk about that.
And we do have a clip.
Let's cue it up with this clip. This is from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Gotta love it.
What? Let's hear it.
Hell is the holdup here.
Frank, this is why I want a total control over the guest list, all right? The eyes of the world are going to be on Philadelphia, and I want to show them that we are not just degenerates, okay? And that is why I'm very nervous about these guys.
So that's from an episode where they're going to watch the Eagles in the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, the Super Bowl that they ultimately win. And so I guess let's get into it. Like, how real is it, do you think, and how much of it is an invention of the media? This idea that Eagles fans are extra drunk, extra rude, extra rowdy, because all football fans are. What do you think?
That's right. And not just football fans, too. The baseball playoffs. Yeah. Had a couple of pretty high-profile incidents. The Dodgers game versus the Padres was delayed for 10 minutes because fans were throwing beer bottles at the Padres. Yeah. But Eagles fans, and I include myself, do like to play it both ways on this sometimes.
Absolutely.
Like, there is definitely a kind of a persecution complex. How can people blame us for this? But also, lots of people really thrive on this idea of, like, we are the meanest, toughest, most
only
passionate.
Certain types of athletes can make it here.
Yeah. And so people will say passion, and sometimes that's a euphemism for some really horrific behavior. Like, there was that guy who went viral a couple weeks ago who was...
Yeah.
But then other people just mean, you know, I watch the games, I care so much, I cheer with my family. I was thinking about it that it feels kind of like a pro wrestling gimmick where people are kind of playing a character, and you know that if you're an Eagles fan at the game, you have to live up to a certain reputation.
I think that's the perfect way to put it. I do think people go into it and they're almost in their minds playing a character. And I will say, I do think I have seen that way more at Eagles games than I've seen it at Phillies, Sixers, Flyers. There's something very different about it. I have found that Philly fans are pretty much median fans at most other events. Maybe not the playoffs for baseball, but they're pretty normal in almost every context. Except Sunday at Lincoln Financial Field.
Yeah, that's been my experience too. And in fact, I went to a couple games with my wife, and she very much does not like going to Eagles games because of that atmosphere, because it is a much more intense, like an angry atmosphere.
And I'll say this, as someone I used to, you know, always go to the Washington versus Eagles game, and I would wear, you know, my Washington gear at the Eagles game, and people would say something like they would shout at you as the non. Yeah. Philadelphia fan, and you were like, wow, like, I can't, you know, if you go to the game, and I've gone to the game in Washington, the Eagles versus Washington game, and no one does that to Eagles fans when they come to the game. So Well, I didn't necessarily see that happen, and I was with Eagles fans when I was there, and you didn't have that. So I was like, wow.
Because we rolled deep.
Because they're probably scared of the Philadelphia fans. But I also did some little research, and I looked around, and there are some actual, like, incidents.
Sure.
Where, you know, Eagles fans acted up. Like, in 2018, apparently an Eagles fan was arrested for punching a police horse. Those type of things blow up.
The famous jail in the bottom of Vet Stadium.
But you can find people chucking, you know, hoagies at the Santa Claus.
Just to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm just saying that, you know.
I kind of like going out of the way when, like, if I'm at the game, say I'm at the Phillies game. I'll speak from a specific example. I was at the Phillies game where the Phillies got eliminated in the playoffs when you're against the Giants.
Yeah.
And there was a Giants fan there. You know, I said, you know what? Your team did great. You were so nice. Just see, to try to like bolster the reputation, to go against the grain, right?
You were trying to we're not all jerks. The tide.
Exactly. You know what? Yeah.
One man issue. Tracer on YouTube says, "It's Always Sunny is a great show, but people should recognize that it's, you know, fiction."
Uh-huh.
And I do think mostly that is the case.
Yeah. I had a moment similar to when I was in grad school. I went to grad school in Iowa City, and we went to an Eagles-Chiefs game, actually. My friends and I convinced some of my grad school friends to drive with me to Kansas City. It's the first time I'd ever been to an away game, and I was at my peak rowdy fan era at that time, and I went ready for a fight. I was ready to be in enemy territory, and we're walking through the tailgate, and everyone was just calling me over and offering me food, and these Kansas City fans were giving me beers and offering me, and I was like, what's the trick here? What are you Trojan
should
horse?
I drink this beer? Yeah. Like,
and they were just nice. It was weird.
By the way, just want to read a few more comments in. Bro's a fan on YouTube says, I've never been a big football fan, but I'm really enjoying learning about the culture. My daughter and I will be watching the game on Sunday, and of course we will root for the Eagles. Jim says, I was 13 when the Eagles beat the Packers for the NFL championship in 1960. It wasn't even televised locally. Afterwards, the fans tore the goalpost down. So that's
back in the day. It was there. Not televised. back in the day, it was not televised.
And if you want to make a comment, you still got time to become a caller here, 888.
477-9499.
I almost said the pledge number. So.
Yes, and you can email studio2@whyy.org. Again, 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you.
Tom, you want a trivia question, man?
Yeah, hit me with it.
All right, you want a halftime act, Super Bowl commercials, or general Super Bowl?
Let's do general.
General, okay.
You look ready, okay. By the way.
Well, I wouldn't be ready on the commercials, but I think I'm going to – I got the last two that you asked.
Okay.
I mean, nobody
– That's why I'm giving you a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were in the control room.
Oh, well, not tough. But yeah. Because there's an easy one here. I'm not giving you that one. Super Bowl 59 will be the 11th time New Orleans has hosted the big game. That ties New Orleans with what other metro area for the most Super Bowls hosted?
Los Angeles?
Give me another one. What would be your second guess?
Arizona? Those are my top.
Give me a third.
Oh, man. How many cities are there?
look, you nailed, you zeroed in on warm parts of the country, which was the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me another one.
Oh, man. I'm drawing, you see, you already said New Orleans. That's where we are. It's got to be somewhere in Florida then, right? No? Oh, now I'm drawing a blank on Florida cities.
The bottom? The one at the bottom? Is it the one at the bottom, Avi?
I'm dancing.
Going to Miami.
Yeah. Jeez.
I said metro area.
I should have told my family to listen.
I think there was one that was in like Miami Gardens, but
not good at geography. We learned.
No, yeah, that's.
But LA, can I say LA is third?
Yeah, so that was close. That was close.
So you bragged, and you know what?
No, that was embarrassing.
Like an Eagles fan, it gets a little too cocky before a big game. You crashed, but you were a fantastic guest. You're a fantastic guest,
awesome.
And you brought an amazing sweater and a lot of great energy, and I just want to thank you again for your time. Tom McAllister, author of Bury Me in My Jersey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And coming up next, what does it mean to sing in a Philly accent? Well, stick with us through the break because we got a vocal coach who's blown up online with her Philly accent singing. She'll even teach us how to do the Eagles fight song in perfect Delcoese.
Delcoese. Mm.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
This could decide the game.
Fourth and goal.
Uh-oh.
And they're going to snap it, and it's Trey Burton who throws caught. Foles, touchdown.
Beautiful.
Welcome back to WHYY Super Bowl special, How the Eagles Bring Philadelphia Together. I'm Kevin McCrory here with Cherry Gregg and Avi Wolfman-Arendt. And that, of course, was the Philly special from the Eagles' Super Bowl 52 victory over Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Brady will be in the booth for Fox calling Super Bowl 59 this weekend, and I can't wait to hear him praising the birds as the green and white confetti falls down at the Superdome on Sunday night.
That assumes he can put a sentence together, Kevin. Now we're joined in studio by Megan.
Not that bad.
Wait, sorry, Megan.
No, that's all right. It's warranted.
He's not that good, but, you know.
Do you know how much they're paying him? It's an insane amount of money to be the worst color commentator I've ever heard.
Look so serious. You see,
I don't even dislike the guy.
He's
way a lot of people do. It's just mind blowing to me because they had a guy who was doing color commentary who was pretty good. Yeah. Whatever.
How do you really feel?
He's a great quarterback. I don't begrudge him. Now we're joined in studio by Megan McDevitt, who is a singer and vocal coach. You might know her from the viral reel she posted where she sings a song from The Little Mermaid in a deep Philly accent. It's unbelievable. Can we play the clip?
Let's see it.
She's on land, they understand, but they don't reprimand their daughters. Bright young women, sick of swimming, ready to stand and ready to know what the people know. Ask all my questions and get some answers.
Wow. Megan McDevitt, first of all, watching yourself sing, I don't know if that was a comfortable feeling for you, but
thank you.
Thank you for going through that, and thank you for joining us on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Before we really get into the singing, Megan, just give us a sense of what football means in the McDevitt household.
Oh, so much. I was born and bred an Eagles fan. I know no greater Eagles fans than my dad and my brother, and my brother's actually here with me today.
Hey, what's up, brother?
He has really instilled the love in me and my dad as well. So much so that one time, this is actually my second time on the radio, because my mom won some radio contest that my brother could be on the air at WIP. Wow. And it just so happened that they were having a competition that day for whoever could sing the Monday Night Football theme the best, they would win tickets to that next game.
Oh my God.
So I called in, and my brother was on the air. I called in.
How old?
I was young. I was maybe like 10.
Okay.
Wow.
And this is Are You Ready for Some Football?
Yeah, a Monday Night Invasion. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm like dancing in the foyer, screaming into the phone, trying to be on WIP. Unfortunately, Rhea did not vote for me to
win.
What? I know.
Whoa.
That's all right.
And when I say Rhea Hughes, you're talking about a WIP personality. Yeah. And I know as a fan of WHYY, I may be listening. Uh-huh. So just, you know, Rhea, there's still a chance to make this right.
You can make it right, Rhea. Yeah.
Wow.
So give us a sense of, like, what's it like watching a game in your household now? Like, do you have certain rituals, superstitions?
Yes.
What's going on in your house?
It's heated. It's tense. There are no frills. It's about the game.
Yes.
Everybody sits in the same spot, right? We got to keep the juju going. It's got to be all the same thing. Have to wear the same clothes. If it worked for the last game and we won the last game, you got to wear the same thing. So it's very intense.
So you co-sign me wearing this dirty jersey.
I do. Yeah.
Wait. So when you say no frills, like, people don't eat stuff? They don't.
Well, yeah, you eat, but it's not about the party. It's about the game.
Yeah.
We're not having conversations. It's the game.
I don't care about your fantasy football team.
No.
I definitely don't care about that. Wow, that was an intense reaction.
Wow.
No, we're here for the real thing.
Got it.
So what is your outfit? Like, do you have your set jersey that you have have to wear?
This t-shirt has been working for me all season long.
Yeah.
So I'm going to roll with it. So my dog has an Eagles collar that she has now been banned from wearing because she wore it for the 3 games that we lost this season.
Oh.
So you took that thing off. That is off. It is burned. It's gone.
Yeah, I'm going to say, get that out of the house.
Oh, my goodness. Bury it somewhere.
Right.
All right. So we heard you singing the Little Mermaid theme
there.
But you came out with another video where you're singing the song Defying Gravity from Wicked.
Yes.
But you do it in a distinct Eagles Philly accent styling. And we're wondering if you could hit us with a little bit of that live right now.
A little bit live. Something like Unlimited. Our future is unlimited. Together we'll be the greatest team there's ever been. Go Birds!
I love it.
Gotta throw in the Go Birds.
So I imagine it's hard to sing in an accent, isn't it? Like, people hear the Beatles sing, they don't sound like they sound when they talk, right?
Right.
So, like, what's the thing?
The thing is a lot of imitation. I have learned from my parents and my family members who are deep Philadelphians, mm-hmm. which is great. And I've really kind of just made a joke of it. And if you in that video, I was really trying so hard not to crack up because it really is just so ridiculous the way I really dug into it. It's tricky to sing in because the Philly dialect sits pretty far back. And then to sing a song like Defying Gravity, which is already hard.
What does sit far back mean? Yeah, like, what's that?
Like the resonance goes back in the throat.
Yeah.
You know? In the throat. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So break it down for people who don't have the Philly accent on lock. What key words do we need to focus on to make sure that it sounds very, very Philly?
First and foremost, use.
Use.
The use also has to sit back a little. You got to like relax into it. It's use. Use now.
Why don't you give us a word and we'll each do it and then you can grade us on
gosh. Oh, goodness, a grade.
Let's say, let's go get some steaks at Dallas Andrews.
Who's going first?
You go first. I'm going to go last.
Let's say it again.
Let's go get some steaks at Dallas Andrews.
Let's go get some steaks at Dallas Andrews.
Dallas Andrews.
Dallas Andrews.
There you go.
Yeah, all right.
That was great.
I got a B minus?
B plus.
Oh, yeah.
Well done. Well done.
I would have went with go get some hoagies at
Hoagies,
Dallas Andrews.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And say it one more time.
I'm going to go get some steaks at Dallas Andrews.
I'm going to go get some steak. I feel like I'm going to London. Accent here.
Whatever.
This
take us to London.
Okay, let's
I like it. I like it.
Let's go get some steaks at Delisandro's.
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 Yeah, get it back. Good.
Northwest Philly, by the way.
My accent is bad. I'm not good at accents, but go ahead.
No, it was great. Yeah. That was awesome. Well done.
We're trying. And you said
use.
Use is another. And what's another word that we got? Because I want to throw in a couple of words and just shock people.
Go birds. You go just keep saying go birds.
Go birds.
Go birds. Go birds.
So if we're trying to sing the fight song, the Fly Eagles Fly song, how would we do that?
So, Fly Eagles Fly. Fly Eagles Fly. It's pretty standard. On the road.
Road.
To victory. Good. Fight. Eagles Fight. Score a touchdown one. Down.
Down.
D-A-L-N. Down. Yeah.
One,
down.
Two, three.
Hit them low.
Low.
Hit them high. You're doing great, Cherry.
Watch those eagles fly.
Yes.
Watch those eagles fly.
Eagles. If we're going to throw it back, the eagles.
Yeah.
As you can see, we are like studying your faces.
Cherry's
like,
taking notes.
Yeah, I did.
I'm ready.
Road.
Wait, so start from the beginning.
Fly
goes fly. There's nothing there.
No.
But
once we get to the fight.
Yeah.
Fight.
Eagles fight.
Score. Fight. Touchdown. One, two, three.
Touchdown.
Down.
Touchdown. One, two, three.
I think I got down.
Hit him low.
You have down, down.
Hit him low.
I got down.
Hit him high.
That high was good. That was a good high.
All right, that's my word. I'll stick with high. We're riding a good high here. Yeah.
There you go. I love it.
I have down. He is high.
I got high. That's why we're a great team.
All right, should we put it all together? Let's try it now. Ready? You kick us off.
Ready and fly eagles fly on the road to victory. Fight, eagles, fight. Score a touchdown. One, two, three.
One, two, three.
Hit 'em low. Hit 'em high. And watch our eagles fly. Fly, eagles, fly. On the road to victory.
Yes, Abby.
E-A-G-L-E-S-E-O. Is that still how you spell that word? I thought we changed the spelling.
I think we did change the spelling on that one.
Thank you, Mayor Park.
Oh, this is good, though. Down.
I'm pretty impressed with those guys.
Yeah.
Do you want a trivia question, by the way? I can give you a halftime show trivia question.
You got it.
Question.
I'm sending good vibes.
Music,
I feel like you're going to get this.
Halftime.
Okay, halftime.
Okay. You got this one. Which of the following artists has not performed the Super Bowl halftime show?
Okay.
Paul McCartney, Gloria Estefan, Taylor Swift, Patti LaBelle.
Taylor Swift.
That's
Bam!
How about it?
She's never done it. Isn't that weird?
But she's too big for it. I'm sure
they did.
She's
like
never too big for the Super Bowl.
There's no way Taylor has not been asked to do the Super Bowl. No way.
Yeah, but she's just waiting for the right time.
But now, you know, she's with Travis. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense at some point.
They have been begging her to do it.
I bet they have.
Well done, by the way.
Thank you. You made me nervous.
But you know what? You did it with such humbleness because you weren't like Taylor Swift. You were like Taylor Swift.
No.
But you knew it.
There you go.
Oh, gosh. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Megan McDevitt, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on today. I know you just got off a flight and you were out doing a gig and all that, so we really appreciate you making some time for our big special today.
Happy to be here. Go Birds.
Go Birds. All right. Now, from music
the going down.
From music to food, let's transition to our next segment with a clip from Silver Linings Playbook.
Do we have that clip there?
She's making crabby snacks and homemade.
Yeah, come on, Dad. Ooh. Be nice. Come on, she's making crabby snacks and homemade. Come on, Dad.
Crabby snacks and homemade. That was Bradley Cooper, Robert De Niro, and Jackie Weaver playing that Eagles-loving Delco family in Silver Linings Playbook. And joining us next to talk about his own version of crabby snacks and homemade and how to maximize your game day spread is Philly chef Michael Solomonov. You know him from Zahav, Federal Donuts, Goldie, and so many more restaurants across the city. Michael, thank you so much for joining us via Zoom.
Yo, thanks so much for having me. Go Birds.
I love it.
So, Michael, give us a sense. Like, if you're just like a regular person who likes to cook, but you're not like a chef, like, how do I elevate my Super Bowl party? Like, what can I do to like make the spread go from an 8 to a 10?
Well, I think that that's a great, I think that the deal is that if you put a little effort into everything, it'll just taste better, right? So your spread, I mean, it depends. Are you going to get wings? Like, I don't really know. There's so many things that you could do. My wife requests, so she makes amazing, amazing chili, but my wife requests me to buy soft pretzels. And do you guys know Joey Baldino?
No.
Who owns Zeppoli and
Collingswood. Is that Collingswood Zeppoli?
Yep, Collingswood and Zeppoli, and then Polizzi Social Club in South Philly. So Joey, who grew up on 11th and Tasker, would always tell me, he and I cooked together at Vetri, and he would tell me about his mom making these like prosciutto provolone press sandwiches with soft pretzels.
That's next level.
It's next level, and like I can't escape that. My wife's always like, you got to make these like pretzel sandwiches. So I feel like that kind of thing. And I think about the things that we love about Philly. We like cheesesteaks, obviously. Mm-hmm. We like wings. We like we like soft pretzels. We like, I mean, anything De Bruno's just kind of spread, I think makes it really good. I will say, and this sounds really chefy and nobody thinks this is that cool, but much like Thanksgiving, I do feel like you need some like vegetables in there somewhere. just to
going out on a limb now, to be honest.
I know that, but I just feel like you're eating a lot of like heavy, salty, often fried stuff. And I do feel like vegetables or at least pickles are probably like the right thing to do, you know?
Yeah. And I got to ask you
that. I know you guys all seem really offended right now.
I mean, you started off really strong with the pretzels, with the cheese and the prosciutto.
Press sandwich.
Yeah. So it was just a come down from that. That's all.
Well, listen. Even if it's broccolini and long hot smothered in provolone.
There you go.
That still counts as a vegetable, okay? Forgive me.
So I got to ask you, because I want to make a Super Bowl charcuterie board. And I want to include the wings. I want to include some chopped up, you know, cheesesteaks. But I want to add the vegetables. So if you were helping me to design this, like, charcuterie, but it's got to be game day. You know what I mean? So because the guys want the wings. They want the regulars. So how would I design this to add those little vegetable elements and elevate it, but then keep the classics?
Okay, so here's what I would do. Listen, you've got carrots and you got celery that have to be by the wings as well as the blue cheese dip, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So what I would do is probably get pickled pepperoncinis, or I would probably roast some long hots as well. There's also a pepper called shifka. We use them a lot here. They're basically like the pepperoncini of the Middle East. They're really spicy and amazing. So shifka peppers, I think, would be dope. I think what I would also do is probably get some brujol. And slice a little brujola because I just feel like you kind of need that on charcuterie. And then I would probably get like a couple different hard cheeses as well. I don't love like soft cheese that much on charcuterie, except for, have you guys heard of Peristead Creamery? It's
I
a guy.
Actually you have, but it's going to make me sound pretentious to say yes. But yes, I have.
It doesn't matter. It's just us. You can.
My wife used to work. My wife used to work at Tria, so I have an excuse. She knows a lot about cheese and wine. So you know that's how I know about it. But go ahead.
Okay, so listen. He's an amazing cheesemaker in Fishtown,
yep.
And he makes a schmear, like a Philly, like Philly cream cheese schmear that is like unbelievable. So you could just buy that. You could buy the schmear and put that out, and that is like another dip. Okay, to elevate as well. It's homemade Philly cream cheese from like an actual cheesemaker. So I think it's really, really cool.
Actual right, so Philadelphia cream cheese.
And that'll go with the wings.
Not from
the
craft. Ohio. Yeah. Not from Ohio.
Yeah, that's
not
right.
From Ohio.
That's right.
And then even your friends that would think that you're pretentious, would think that I'm certainly pretentious, will be probably a little bit buzzed and they'll taste this and be like, yo, this cheese is dope.
With a Philly accent, I love it.
Yeah, though I think they'll really like it. So I think that there's like plenty of stuff to elevate. But at the end of the day, I feel like we're all going to be eating like meatball sandwiches from Wawa anyways. So do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want.
Can I ask you, have you ever tried to tailgate, like, you know, cook outside, do that whole thing? Or like, and is it, because you're a very talented chef. If you've done it, did you find it, you know, doable and easy? Or was it like, whoa, these guys, man, you need like a lot of forethought.
No. So I like, okay, so we cook over charcoal all the time anyways.
Yeah.
So for us, tailgates make a ton of sense, like a ton. Even like cheeseburgers cooked directly over charcoal, you know, in a parking lot at like 10:15 in the morning.
It does sound
just
good.
Tastes so good. So no, I like it. I mean, I don't need to cook fancy at all. I don't think that that's how any of us meet, like no chefs eat like that anyways too. We're mostly eating like cereal, watching TV at the end of the night anyways, you know?
Do you feel pressure at your Super Bowl party to make it delish? I mean, could you ever just be like, I mean, everybody's expecting fill in the blank. Pressure,
so I always kind of go big when I cook at home anyways, like even if it's like dinner or whatever on Sundays, I go big. Frankly, my wife makes like the best chili. And she, and that's like tradition. She's been doing that for like all the Sundays. So we're definitely, she's making chili on Sunday and we're not going to change things too much for this game. But she makes fantastic chili. So we'll probably do that.
That's part of the ritual. Yes.
Well, chili is nice too, because you don't, there's no, oh.
Yeah,
we're coming up at a break here, Michael, but we're really.
He was about to wax poetic on chili, too. Oh, that's man. Michael Solomonov.
It's okay. Next time, everybody.
It's Michael Solomonov of Zahav and Goldie and Federal Donuts.
Even golf.
Lays and Rolf, don't forget about that. Thank you so much, Michael.
Go Bears!
Go Bears! All right.
Eagles!
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
Underdogs. And you know what Underdogs is? It's a hungry dog. And Jeff Statlin has had this in our building for 5 years. It's a quote in the O-line room that has stood on the wall for the last 5 years. Hungry dogs run faster. And that's this team. Bottom line is, we wanted it more.
Welcome back to WHYY's Super Bowl special, How the Eagles Bring Philadelphia Together. I'm Kevin McCrory alongside Cherry Gregg and Avi Wolfman-Aaron. And that, of course, was Jason Kelce in his full Mummer's regalia at the podium during the parade celebration in 2018.
And the thing is, I remember that day I was covering the parade on the parkway, and I was like, I love me some Jason Kelce after
of course.
That moment.
Legendary.
That was one of the most memorable moments ever.
I'm a hungry dog because I just heard that last segment about food, and I haven't had lunch yet, so I'm a pretty hungry dog myself.
Yeah, but that was a moment. Do you remember that moment?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I didn't get to see it live because we were all covering it, but I was in a different part of the parade route, like interviewing people. No, I wasn't at the art museum part, so I saw it later.
It was a great day. It was, first of all, leading after Philadelphia won the Super Bowl, and I'm taking it back to 2018. I know we're going to talk about our memories, but like I just, moving to Philadelphia, one of the things I learned is that the whole city's psyche is tied to how the Eagles do on a Sunday. And everybody just wanted to win. And that was the first season I ever felt that Philadelphia finally had high self-esteem.
Yeah.
You know, they started feeling like winners, like acting like winners. And then the city won. It was just the most glorious night. And by the way, I broke a car the night of the Super Bowl win because I was driving and got stuck in a throng of people and tried to back up and I fell into a sinkhole.
Oh, no. What?
Yeah, it was crazy. The car fell into a sinkhole. I had to leave it walk out of the back.
Were you injured?
No, I was not injured. The car was injured.
But you fell. The car,
backed into a whole sinkhole and the wheel snapped. But I got out.
You were in the car when it fell in the sinkhole, right?
Well, the back wheel.
I mean, it's
fell
not like a 10-foot ditch.
It wasn't like a whole, But my whole point is, I didn't even care about the city. I was on Broad Street with the people. That's how amazing it was.
I would have cared a little bit.
On Super Bowl. I did care, but I'm just
the
saying.
The next day you cared.
The next day when I'm trying to get the car from there. But my whole point is, 2018, that win was amazing. And I'm not even a lifelong Eagles fan. You guys are.
Yeah. Well, it speaks volumes, Cherry, that you've come on board and you become like a rocker of the Midnight Green. We love it. We love it. We love having you on our side. We're better for it. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to keep the same shirts and one day, from now, mine can look as weathered as the ones that you all wear.
But Cherry, we've been having a blast this hour. I know that people have been writing in on YouTube and emailing and all that.
Yeah, some memories. Celesta emails, my Uncle Bud was a lifelong Eagles fan and season ticket holder. He died in 2013 and was cremated. She says, my cousin Richard kept his ashes. Richard was part owner of Patty's Pub in Old City. And in 2017, Richard took Uncle Bud's urn and sat it on the bar with everyone watching the game. And when they won, we knew it was Bud's spirit that carried them to victory.
Yes.
That's deep.
Wow. You know what I mean? And Marianne emails, my parents moved from New York City to a western suburb of Philly in the mid-90s. And she says, I remember my mom could not get over one of the priests at our Catholic church who on Eagles game days would end mass by having everyone sing the Eagles fight song.
Beautiful. That was right. So my wife's from Central PA.
Wow.
And when I went up there and to their Catholic masses, I said, where's everybody's Eagles jerseys at? Because where I grew up, church was everybody's wearing their Eagles jersey at the 12:15 mass trying to get home for the 1 o'clock game.
Is that theologically sound to sing the Eagles fight song at the end of the at mass? Did that happen ever at your parish?
No, that did not.
Okay, that is
extra.
But
you know what? I know that the priests and the pastors get the evil eye if their sermons go too close to the game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like around, 12:15, their people are looking at you like, this needs to wrap up.
Yeah, wrap it up.
And they're giving the wrap-up signal.
Yeah, we get it.
Joining us live now in studio is Nick Kariuki, Billy Penn's trending news reporter. And you're going to give us a rundown, Nick, of the Billy Penn Super Bowl bingo card. We heard Jason Kelce there in that segment, and I counted, you've got three Kelces on the board there. So basically, this is like, maybe if you're not super into football, you can basically follow along to this bingo card and have like something to really watch for. Is that the idea, Nick?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is the third season we're doing this, and it's just kind of created as a way to kind of make this interesting for the casuals watching the game, make it kind of have the hardcore fans watch the game and also kind of pay an extra piece of attention to what's going on with the broadcast. And it also pokes fun at the way that the Super Bowl broadcast will be, because they're going to refer to Kansas City references. They're going to refer to Philly references. Sometimes those are lazy. They'll harken back to throwing snowballs at Santa. So this is kind of
cheese steaks,
of course.
So
from one of two reputable cheesesteak restaurants,
Pasadena's.
So right. So tell us the basics. How does Super Bowl bingo work?
So this year, like the first year, we're going to have two cards. It is kind of going to be the references. So like we said, if Pats and Geno's comes up as a reference, you check that off on your list. If Jason Kelce comes up, he's kind of fallen into that. Is he with the Chiefs? Is he kind of with Travis? But we have him kind of generally here as Jason Kelce having fun, which feels like
probably
a given.
Gonna happen.
Yeah. Check that off. And when you kind of standard bingo rules, you get your five down or your five across or diagonal. You can yell bingo. You can yell go birds.
I like Go Birds. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like, yeah.
So that's one of the boards.
Yes.
And that's, what's the second board?
The other one is kind of finding the, in the broadcast or in the commercials or in reference, the Birds fans, the famous Bird fans.
Celebrities
that are going to be there. So we have Jason Kelce is the free space because, of course he's going to be there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But Kylie Kelce's made it on there. And we have kind of Jake Tapper, Questlove, Miles Teller, Kevin Bacon, Kevin Hart, people who are kind of noted Birds fans who are likely to be in the broadcast somewhere, whether in the stadium.
So if the camera cuts to them, which it usually does, because and I see Gilly the King made it to the list.
Yeah,
on the thing.
To Gilly on that.
Yeah, he made it to the bingo card.
Cheryl Lee Ralph made it. Good for Cheryl Lee Ralph.
You know, and so, and Will Smith's on here. Meek Mill. So when they shoot, go to them. That's when you can
cross
it off.
Yeah, cross it off, and hopefully we manage to make it across. I think I was doing this last year with the. The 2024 one was a Billy Penn bingo card for Sad Eagles fans. So we kind of leaned into the disappointment and the frustration by kind of just venting, allowing the fans to vent. So if either quarterback turned over the ball, there was a space for one of those. If
Schadenfreude,
if Tony Romo retold a sad cowboy story, you could check that out.
By the way, 2 years ago, do you recall if, like, the board was completable?
Yes.
Like, it was a way, like, someone, if you actually paid attention and caught them all, would you have gotten bingo?
Yes.
You would have?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
I did, so for 2023, I did kind of do it in, after the fact, because I was a little busy covering the Super Bowl. I'm not sure about the celebrities one, but the references one was finishable. 2024, I actually was able to kind of sit down and check off as it went along, and I have it here. Like,
you got the proof.
Yes, I have. I have this.
The receipts.
This is the sheet from that day, and it was finishable. And then even when I went back and kind of like looked at the stuff that I missed, that you could have done this probably four ways.
Wow.
I want to talk about some of the stuff that's in some of the spaces, right? Just so like people can understand like why it's on there. So, for instance, in the non-celebrity board, you have, I like this one, Shane Gillis tries to sell you beer. So a lot of our listeners might not even know who Shane Gillis is. But if you are in the world of culture that overlaps a lot with football, this guy has become unavoidable. Tell us a little bit about how that made the space.
Okay, so that one actually replaced Kevin Hart tries to make you gamble.
Because we'll probably see DraftKings commercial.
I don't think so. Like, by my understanding, there will not be that ad in this kind of broadcast of the Super Bowl. So,
well, this is only broadcast. Okay, yes.
Yeah, in the commercials even as well. So I don't think there's one coming. I could be wrong, but
wow.
That's what my research has
shown. The one day, the one time, you won't see one. Okay.
Yeah, so I kind of looked over the Super Bowl commercials. That's kind of to kind of reveal the tradecraft a little. That's part of it is kind of looking at who is going to be relevant in those commercials. And I saw
you're putting your thumb on the scale a little bit there.
He's coming in. Well, if you're kind of paying attention to the beer commercials, you will likely see Shane Gillis trying to sell you beer. And so if you're paying attention and you kind of see it in the moment, it should be.
And he's a comedian, by the way, who does a lot of beer commercials now. And he's just everywhere all of a sudden. I feel like he's become, is he on the celebrity one?
I believe so.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, he's there.
What a come up for Shane Gillis. The other one, one of the ones I actually liked, I like that you put pink on the celebrity one. Does not get enough credit as a true Philadelphia area celebrity. Shout out
to Pink, yeah.
Shout out to Bucks County.
Yeah.
Pink. Yep. I like that.
We got, of course, they got Dawn Staley on here. Y'all have a little, and Rob McElhenney, who we had on the show.
Yeah, that's right. We could have crossed that off earlier this week, Jerry.
I know, that's right. Good.
And Nick, tell us, I guess, a little bit about your personal connection to the Eagles. I can't remember. Are you a fan or are you a fraud? It's an either.
Wow,
you're going to put me on the spot now. I'm a recent transplant to Philadelphia.
Welcome.
Thank you. I think I've definitely, as kind of someone who's following sports, writing about sports in Philadelphia, it's definitely given me a lot of kind of content and a lot of stuff that I find interesting that I try to cover in a way that everyone else can find interesting, whether or not they're sports fans. I'm originally a Kenyan kid with a mom from Milwaukee. So if you ask me for, about my football team, I don't want to say it out loud, but I am a shareholder. So
far. Okay. He's a Packers fan, folks.
And you're actually more of a fan of football, as I understand it. And Liverpool is your team, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Soccer.
It's a good year.
Well, thank you, Nick Kariuki, Billy Penns, trending news reporter. Great to be here. Great to be able to feature the Super Bowl bingo card.
Yeah, it's available on BillyPenn.com. We'll be kind of sending it out throughout the weekend, so it's easy to kind of print out and take to your party, take to the bar,
should people have a prize if they have it at, you know?
I think yelling go birds and
that's all you need.
You can come up with your own prize, right?
Yeah.
Take a big old bite of a soft pretzel with a bunch of meat in the middle. Like
that's
Michael
right.
Talking about. Yeah. Love it.
Thanks so much, Nick, for your time, man.
Thank you very much.
So we're getting right down near to the end of our big 2-hour special here, but we wanted to make sure we kind of could carve some time out for more of those Super Bowl 52 memories, right?
Yeah.
And like what it really meant. And I guess one thing I wanted to highlight is we've been talking all these 2 hours about just like the family and the connections and how deep this stuff goes. When we won that Super Bowl in 2018, like it felt like a collective weight was lifted off of my shoulders. And I didn't even realize I was carrying it. I think that the city felt that way that night. And like it was such an emotional experience seeing that Brandon Graham sack and then seeing that failed Hail Mary from Tom Brady. And we won and the confetti came down and there's Nick Foles with the baby with the earmuff things on, right? And like I just lost it. Like I think I was crying. I gave a very tearful speech about like the people who came before us and what this really means.
Is this on the internet somewhere?
I don't know. probably not on the internet. But like your head goes to the people who passed and the people who weren't there to watch that game.
Yeah.
And there is something different this time around, right? That weight isn't there, but it's that same anchor I feel like is still in me, right? I've been thinking all week about my grandmothers and my grandfather and my dad and you know my uncles and like people who aren't here anymore and like how much this mattered and would have mattered to them.
Oh,
amen.
I don't even know what to say. Like I'm gonna rub his arm. No, this is it definitely is good. I feel like now Philadelphia's whole psyche has shifted.
Yeah,
that 2018 win changed the city. And I mean, no longer is Philadelphia always the underdog, always losing. No, they were winners. And that's why, you know, seeing Jason Kelce talk like that changed the whole mindset of the team. And now they get to go in and know that they can win.
So will they win, Cherry? Are they going to win?
Well, hold on, Avi. Tell us about your 2018 experience.
Oh, no. That's not as interesting. I mean, I was emotional, and I do agree completely that, like, this time around, like, it doesn't really feel like it's for me. Last time it felt like it was for me and it was for my family and everyone who had suffered through this over so many years.
And you suffered in enemy territory, too. Yeah.
But I think this time I feel like more I want validation for the players who are on the team who've never won before. It would be very nice for them to win. But for me, I got one. I'm good.
Aww.
This one's for your daughter, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, we're going to change the juju. Yeah,
I only had two kids alive when we won before, and now I've got four. So this is for Cal and Ross.
Can I tell you guys what the final score is going to be?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Tell us.
Okay. I've thought through this out. Okay.
And he has a clipboard, y'all.
He's got a clipboard.
Radio. Got a clipboard.
Philadelphia was officially chartered as a city on October 25th, 1701.
Okay.
10-25. 10 plus 25 is 35. The Eagles will score 35 points. You can place a bet on that. Kansas City was incorporated as a city on March 28th, 1853. 328, 3 plus 28 is 31.
Oof.
The final score will be Eagles 35, Chiefs 31. Bet the house on it.
But, you know, I just want to point this out. We had Rob McElhenney on the show, and he said there would be that the Eagles will win by 4 points.
Yes.
I just want to say all of this is lining up.
The karma's undeniable.
So just said a 4-point win. He said a 4-point win. I'm saying a 20-point win. It's going to be a blowout. Okay? We're taking them out.
Gabe came back all of a sudden. What's your prediction, Cherry? What's going to happen?
I'm just going to say W on the Eagle side. That's it. I don't know the spread. I'm just going, the green is going to win.
Yeah.
We're going to be cheering.
What are you watching?
I'm going to do a little Super Bowl charcuterie at the crib. You know, we're going to be at the house.
Nice.
We're going to set it up. We're going to have our outfits on. And I'm not going out there in the madness, though. Yeah. I will be watching it and cheering them on. But when the parade comes, I'm going to be out there.
Yeah. When we won before, I was wearing this jersey, and I was at my brother-in-law Mike's place. He was living in Roxborough at the time.
Yeah.
He lives in Phoenixville now. I'll be wearing the same jersey. I'll be out in Phoenixville. It's going to be great.
I'll be at my my cousin's house in Mount Airy with a whole bunch of family. We got folks coming in from New York, upstate New York, and from D.C. and everywhere.
This
in
is an event.
Well, it's a small event. It's a small event. So, but it really is nice to know that whatever happens, you get to experience it with your family, because that is ultimately like what makes it special and what separates it from so many other things in our lives. So, from our Studio 2 family here at WHYY in Philadelphia. Just want to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yes, thank you.
And
we had a blast.
We had a great time. Wow, flew by. Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is this guy right here, Kevin McCory, from Studio 2, WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarit.
I'm Kevin McCory.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And
go Birds! If it was up to me, I wouldn't give it nobody's no sympathy.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?